GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Tango Tango Papa 1510, May 20, 2011.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Weilser with you, coming to you this evening from home. Got home, I guess it was mid to late afternoon. And right after I got home, I didn't even come in the house. I parked the truck and went back to town, or, you know, down to, actually, down, first down to West Fork, and got the mail, and had to make a trip to the bank. And so I had several errands to run, and then I ended up, I hadn't eaten any lunch at all, and so I ate a kind of late, it ended up being kind of a late lunch. And so I guess it was about, it was pushing about 5 o'clock whenever I came back, whenever I actually got home and came in the house. And so was kind of tired, and so I ended up watching it was part of a movie I've been watching on Netflix. I don't know if this was a remake of a movie called They Live, but it was kind of really, I watched it, and it was kind of stupid. it had a kind of an interesting premise, but I finished watching that, and then I went ahead and just got in the bed, even though it was still daylight. I kind of laid down and ended up sleeping until, I guess, I woke up about 10 o'clock. So I slept probably for, maybe about 3 to 4 hours, probably. And then so around 10 or a little after, I went ahead and got up. And so, and right now it's about midnight. So I've been up for maybe about 2 hours after sleeping. And so right now I'm pretty much, kind of wide awake. But I was really really tired earlier, so I just went ahead and laid down and slept. But it's a very nice day today. It was raining, I think in some areas it was raining, but around here it was just cloudy, and it was about 75 degrees. Now, I just looked at my phone a while ago, and the temperature widget on my phone is saying that it's 72 degrees. Is still 72 degrees. Now, I don't know if that's really, the phone widget, it updates, so it's, I guess that's accurate, but you get in the 70 degree range, that's actually pretty nice weather. So, But I'm going to be home for the next few days, and so just kind of looking forward to not doing much of anything. Just kind of being away from the truck for a few days and, kind of recuperate from having to, kind of constantly constantly planning this and planning that and doing this and doing that and constantly making all kinds of deadlines. you know, it's nice to kind of get away from the deadlines for a while. So anyway, I was the other day I was on YouTube and I found this I don't know where I got the link from it, but you know, in any case, I ended up downloading this, and so I've got the audio for it that I'm going to play. And it, I hadn't even watched it. I was kind of poking around on my computer here, and I found it, and I remembered that I downloaded it. And it's called The American Dream, and it's an animated movie that's about 30 minutes. I think it's about 30 minutes long, in any case, it's kind of a cartoon. It's an animated movie, but they do a really good job of explaining how the U.S. money system works. And you know, I'm assuming it's going to be similar, probably similar. In any country that has a central bank, you're probably going to have a similar setup. You know, and these central bankers end up kind of controlling, you know, it's all the same central bankers that control currencies all over the world. But, you know, this, people don't have a clue how the, you know, Americans in particular do not have a clue how the, you know, how our money system's set up. And it's like, you know, you start telling them and it's like, you know, most people, you know, they don't, you know, it's like their eyes glaze over. They don't want to hear it. They, you know, it's the last thing, you know, I don't know, it's difficult for people to understand, you know, if you just explain how the money system works, it's, even if you're trying to understand how it works, it's kind of difficult. But so this movie does a really good job of kind of, bringing it into terms that, you know, into real world terms, you know, how the thing works. So I'm going to go ahead and play this. And as I say, this is The American Dream. And what I'll do, I'm going to embed this, the YouTube video. I'll embed it in the show notes as well as, so you can watch the thing. Because you learn a lot from the audio, but it's worth watching the whole, you know, so you can see what's going on the screen as well. So here is this video is called The American Dream.
American dream. There's a reason they call it a dream.
Who's there?
Cock-a-doodle-doo, pal.
No! I don't have any more money. My job sucks right now. Please, I'll have more money next month. You can't take my house.
Is that your signature?
Oh, okay, well, just help me work something out, okay? I mean, you said I'm a good credit guy, right? I mean, hey, wait! My dog is in there! No, don't take my dream! Oh, how did this happen? Huh? Hardman? Is that you?
Been a long time since the fourth grade.
Is that a time machine?
There's no need to concern yourself with my outstanding accomplishments. Best get in. There's not much time.
I gotta go down to the bank and get my life back. They took everything!
Oh, bank ain't gonna help you now. Towel in the trunk. Extra set of balls. Put them on. You're gonna need them.
You're gonna get my dream back?
No, pal. You are. I'm here to show you how.
Submitted for your approval. 1. First National Bank. What is a bank, you ask? A curious place where both space, time, and irony exist. And yet, don't.
Are you going to be doing that the whole time?
Pay attention, Pyle. Exhibit A. Those who have come to deposit and safely store their earned monies. Exhibit B. Those who need to borrow said money for purposes unknown.
Hey! That's me!
Ergo, Exhibit C. The bank only has so much money in the vault to lend out to people such as you.
Hey! Hey, that's the guy! He took my house!
Really screwing my vibe here, Pyle. Space-time continuum. He can't hear you. Just let me narrate. Now, where was I?
So you see, by the time he got to you, Pyle, his bank was out of money.
But he gave me lots of money and charged me a lot of interest.
Yes, that's the only way banks make money, by making debt loans. Debt equals money, Pyle. Remember that. Debt equals money. The more loans they make, the more money they make.
But if they don't have any money, then where did my money come from?
You're gonna want to take a step back, Pyle.
Whoa! No way!
Yes way, and that's nothing.
Hey, buddy, need some money?
They didn't do that!
Oh, they did exactly that, Pyle. Remember, banks make money by making loans, by selling debt, even to bad credit risks.
Yo, have some money, dude. Just sign here.
Oh, my gosh!
They called it free money.
Yeah, that's exactly what my loan guy told me. Free money!
But it ain't free. The worst Pyle was offering money to people who don't even need it. People, Pyle, like you.
You're right. I didn't need him. I was happy here. I didn't need it! Why's he sad? He's making all that money.
Shh! He's thinking. Now wait for it. Now wait for it. Bingo. See, the bank is loaned to everyone in town. But to make more money, they have to loan even more.
More? How much money do they need?
More.
Ah, what's that?
Behold, a black horse riding. Credit card.
I mean, it's gonna be okay. Everything's gonna be okay. What now?
Now? Well, Pyle, with all this money, we might as well party.
Oh, this is awesome! I needed to get my head clear. When I get back, I'm gonna straighten all this out. I just hope Dream is doing okay.
I'm going to get you, my pretty.
Yep, he is. I'm sure he is.
You put it on his tab. Little something for yourself. Wait.
You know, wait a second, Hartman. I just thought of something. If I got this money from the bank, and the bank got it from the Federal Reserve dump trucks...
Go on.
Then where does the Federal Reserve get their money?
Real nice time, ladies. Real nice. Now excuse me while I bow to you.
Say, Hartman, why am I wearing a burglar bikini top?
Because no one is allowed inside the Fed. Not you, not me, no American citizen, no duly elected member of our Congress, not the Supreme Court.
Not the Supreme Court?
Not the Supreme Court. Not the Justice Department, not the CIA, DIA, FBI, ATF, ATE, NBC, not even G-O-D.
How come the government isn't allowed inside its own building?
Government? Pyle, the Fed is a private bank owned by private stockholders. Do not let the name Federal fool you. This plays about as federal as Federal Express.
A private bank? Private?
Shh. Best to keep your voice down, Pyle.
This is Ethan, Federal Reserve.
Hey, Eth, Bill here, First National.
Hi there, Bill. How are you?
Good, good. We're running a little low on money.
No problem. How much you need?
Oh, how does 20 million sound?
What?
Excellent. We'll ship it over first thing tomorrow.
Wait, he can just call up the Fed and ask for more money and they give him whatever they want?
No, pal. The Fed don't give the banks money. The Fed loans the banks money. The banks have to pay it back with interest. Now, come on, time to go.
Wait. I still don't understand. Where does the Fed get their money? I mean, if they're a private bank. You said they're a private bank, right? Okay, so who puts money into the Fed bank?
This is Mel, United States Mint.
Hi, Mel. First National needs another 20 millis.
We're already running the presses full steam here, Ethan.
Gotta keep making loans, gotta keep the money flowing.
All right, you're the Fed. Whatever you guys say, 20 million more by morning!
But I don't get it. What's so wrong about the Fed printing money?
Because it's unconstitutional, pal. Our treasury is supposed to create our money, but now the Fed controls the printing of America's money. Nobody gets a friggin' dollar that the Fed didn't print.
So?
They print the money, then they loan it to the government, then they charge the government interest, and then the government taxes you to pay for it. Wake up, pal!
God, I don't see what the big deal is.
You know, you're right, pal.
Wait, I am?
Yeah. I forget how effective they are at keeping you ignorant.
Well, that's okay. Hey, I'm not ignorant.
Do you even know what money is, Pa? In the long, long ago, people bought it. They traded things they had for things they wanted. I'll trade you my raspberries for that there pot pie.
I don't want your berries.
Come on. Wow, those sweet berries.
They're not sweet. They're old, and I don't like berries.
Give me that pot pie!
No!
As you can see, this modern situation created some problems. Then, one day, a goldsmith walked up and said...
Now, everybody thinks gold is valuable, so why doesn't everybody trade gold for things they need?
A price was set for gold, and now it was very easy to conduct commerce because people could trade gold for all the things they needed.
Armin! Wow, look at all my gold! Hey, stop them! That's my gold!
Damn, thieves!
Say there, Pyle. I've got a vault and some guards. I can keep your gold safe for you.
For a small fee.
Yeah, sure, that'd be awesome.
You see, Pyle, this is how the first bank made money.
There you go, Pyle. I owe you 100 gold coins.
Okay, great!
Come back anytime and redeem your gold when you want it. It'll be right here, in my vault.
Now you're holding the very first paper money pile.
Wow, this is great. It all makes sense.
Oh, that's right. It was good, and everybody started using IOUs because everybody knew the IOU was as good as gold.
Wow, this candy is really a good price. One IOU. I'm getting some more for later. Hey! Wait a minute, it was just one IOU. 10 IOUs for chocolate? You can't just raise prices like that.
Oh, the Candyman can.
Oh, the Candyman can.
Wait, that is just freaking wrong.
It's called inflation, Pyle. It makes your IOUs worth less and less until they are worth nothing. Less bang for the buck. Dollar ain't what it used to be.
But I worked hard and I baked all those pot pies. Now I have to work harder to make less? That's not fair.
Oh, if you think that's not fair, you're gonna love the next part.
What's he doing?
How do banks make money, Pyle?
By making more loans?
Oh, that's right. He's good. See, he prints more IOUs without any more gold, loans them out for interest, makes a pretty penny, and nobody is the wiser. Unless... everybody wanted their gold back at the same time.
No. That's my gold.
Not anymore.
What are you talking about?
I'd like to redeem my IOUs, please. Thank you very much.
Hey! I want my gold back now! Thief! Thief!
Gotta love the bank run. Bringing people together. See, they all found out he was stealing. Made a run on the bank and demanded their gold, but as you can see, they ain't no gold to get.
Hardman!
Don't worry, Pyle. Back in these times, vengeance will be yours. Three things in this world you don't do. Never mess with another man's woman. Never mess with another man's ego. And most importantly, you never mess with another man's money. Else, the man will mess with you.
My God! You hung him?
Yes, Pa. Oh, we hung him. We hung him high. And do you know why?
Because he was a thief?
Because, Pyle, an evil invention was born. Man discovered how to turn worthless paper into gold. Thus was invented the ultimate machine to steal real money and enslave all the nations on Earth.
It's alive!
Oh, now, come on. You're just being dramatic. I mean, I lost my house, but...
What is that? Explain.
A nuclear power plant?
Mm-hmm.
Produces lots of electricity and little pollution. An invention for the good of humanity.
Okay, but what's this have to do with...
3, 2...
Holy!
Atomic energy! A discovery more powerful than anything man had yet conceived. It can be used for good or evil. Now... Unlike Einstein, the goldsmith's discovery has been kept a closely guarded secret. It was never intended for you to see. This discovery is called fractional reserve banking. In the wrong hands, it's more powerful than the nuclear bomb in its ability to completely and utterly destroy a nation who is subjected to its perversion. No, 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 no. It is time we stop this evil secret and the men behind it.
You're being ridiculous.
Before America is destroyed forever. Believe it, Pop.
No, 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 no. I just want my dog back.
Damn it. That's it. I give up. Let them live in chains. No, Hardman. The Tree of Liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants.
Thomas Jefferson?
Mr. President, how do I get him to understand? As we did, son, remain vigilant. Too many have hidden the truth, and the light of our liberty dims with every passing day. Quickly, take my horse. Show him.
Wait, show me what? Where are we going?
Stallion of Liberty! Bravo the Hoary Wind!
Oh, where are we?
Battle of Waterloo! Hold on! We gotta get through! The money machine! There it is!
Hey! Is that the same people?
Rich banker men from Germany flying under the banner of the Red Sheet. They finance both sides of the war. We must hurry! That's him! The Red Shield courier! Shoot him!
No! I'm not shooting anyone!
Damn it, Pa!
What?
He beat everyone back with the news of the war and told England that Napoleon won. The Red Shield backers in London pretended that England was doomed and started selling their English stocks. The English went into a selling frenzy to get rid of worthless English money.
But the English won, right?
Of course they won, but it was a trick by Red Shield. They waited until the stocks plummeted to pennies and then bought England back for nearly nothing.
What? They did that? How?
When the English leaders found out, they had no choice but to give themselves over to the Red Shield. Their money was gone, and they were slaves to the Red Shield war debt. Since that time, the English have been paying their national taxes directly to the Red Shield private bankers. The people have no idea. But the bankers bragged about what they did to us, laughing at us all the way to the bank.
Why, it's the best business I've ever done. If I can control a nation's wealth, I care not who makes its laws.
Oh, is this what Jefferson wanted to show me?
No, Pyle. Look. They're in America, too? The Red Shield banks are here, Pyle. Seeking a way to conquer our American dream. The dream you have, Pyle. The dream of free men. They tried to take over our country many times and failed because Jefferson and the Patriots vowed to stop the evil tyrants at all costs. By authority of eternal God, he would not let the bankers win again. To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. We must make our choice between economy and liberty or profusion and servitude.
Wow.
I place economy among the first and most important of republican virtues, and public debt as the greatest of the dangers to be feared.
It is incumbent on every generation to pay its own debts as it goes.
We must have a central bank to secure this country's finances.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of their property until their children will wake up homeless on the very continent their fathers conquered.
Jefferson, you're mad. This country will have a central bank.
Who's that?
America's first Secretary of Treasury.
Alexander Hamilton?
Not for long.
Aaron Burr, Thomas Jefferson's vice president. They didn't take too kindly to our first Sec Treasury. Sweet shot, Burr. The first attempt at a central bank only lasted 20 years and we shut it down. But the bankers tried again against old Hickory President Andrew Jackson.
You are a den of vapors and thieves. I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out.
After surviving an assassination attempt, Jackson finally defeated the bank in 1836. When asked what was the greatest accomplishment in his life, Old Hickory replied,
I killed the bank.
And those were his last words. I killed the bank. And with real money backed with real gold, our country experienced the greatest boom in any nation's history. Oh, it was beautiful, pal. But the bankers, greedy for more power and wealth, were concocting their most ambitious plan yet to once and for all take control of the finances of the United States. In 1910, a secret meeting was held at a J.P. Morgan estate on Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia. This meeting was so secretive, so concealed from government and public knowledge, that the 10 attendees used code names.
I am clearly the richest man, so I should be the one to run the super-secret central bank. I own all the oil in America. I am clearly richer than you will ever be, hula girl. I should run the super-secret central bank. You're nothing compared to me, lube job. I shall run the secret bank.
Silence!
Supreme Master Leader, I didn't know you were gonna be here.
I'm not. Neither are you, dumbass.
Oh, yeah, right. He's so smart.
None of you shall run the bank. We have failed in the past because of openness. This time, the key to success is secrecy. The people must believe that they run the bank.
Yes, brilliant! A sneak attack. What's the plan?
We first create panic, then we show them the solution. With our man in office and well-planned timing, we will have our central bank. And so the people think it is theirs. We shall christen it Federal. The Federal Reserve.
They struck on December 23rd, 1913. When most of our Congress were at home eating fruitcake, these bastards, bankers, presented their treasonous act to their newly elected accomplice, Woodrow Wilson, who had fortuitously already agreed to sign it before he was even elected.
Wait, the IRS? I thought we always had the IRS.
No, Pyle. They did this to us, too. The Fed now has the exclusive power to print America's money. They loan this money to our banks and our government at interest, putting immediate debt on our own money, printing more and more, so each dollar they print becomes worth less than the one before. Merry Christmas. What in the hell is that? That pie is how our government now must pay back these debts to the Fed. Your taxes did not go to your government.
They don't?
It's the greatest theft in human history.
But, okay, I mean, I sort of get what you're saying, but it's also confusing. And really, Hartman, I don't see how it affects me at all. If I had more money, none of this would have happened. Hartman? $19.55? Wow, what are we doing here?
Oh, a little bit of shopping. Here, hold this. Bet on a guess? 23 cents. Postage stamp. $3. Ounce of gold, $35. Hot baby. Priceless. Best be getting that.
Hey, Hartman! I need my car, man!
Oh, was that Michael J.?
Yeah, he'll be fine. Now, Pyle, would you agree that you have the same exact things you had in 1955?
Yeah, one stamp, 1 gallon of gas, 1 ounce of gold, and one home. Wow, we just made a lot of money.
Run.
Hey!
Gotta pay your taxes. Bet it's nice to have made all that money.
Wait, that isn't fair. Now I actually have less money. I can't even go buy the things I just sold.
The IRS and the Fed's inflation work together, Pyle. They aren't just taxing gain, they are taxing their inflation. You are no richer than you were in 1955. Now, does that sound fair or American to you?
Yeah, but I mean, who doesn't hate taxes? I hate the IRS anyway.
Pyle, the higher they make the inflation, the more your money they take. It's thievery. You're not paying taxes on any more. You are paying taxes on the same. And now, you have less. They take our property away right in front of our eyes, just like Thomas Jefferson said they would.
What's that?
Oh, they found us. Quick, my sword.
What sword?
We don't need your banking machine. I'll condemn you to die, damn it. Die! Pile! The Nanky Bogey on my nine. Take him at his knees.
Well, we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
What's happening? Where am I?
I believe perhaps you understand now, Pyle, but you are afraid.
JFK, Hartman, what does this have to do with my house and my dog? Okay, that's enough. I want to go home now.
This is the last president to stand up to the Fed. You must see. On June 4, 1963, President Kennedy signed Executive Order 11110. This executive order empowered the U.S. Treasury to issue real money without the Fed. It would have worked. Kennedy's plan to dismantle the Federal Reserve machine had begun. But 6 months later, John F. Kennedy went to Dallas and never returned.
No way. No way they could do that.
The new president, Lyndon Johnson, threw out Kennedy's order. And since JFK, no president has dared confront the secret powers behind the Federal Reserve. They consolidate bigger and bigger banks, print more and more money, accountable to no one, decimating our nation's wealth for the benefit of a few.
Why? Why do this? If they hurt us, it hurts the global bankers too.
No, Pyle. They are protected. They are too big to fail.
But I'm not. Those sons of bitches!
Sons of bitches all. The day was cold. The wind sharp and strong. But we were determined. The bankers and their parasites had us vastly outnumbered, but their hubris made them weak. Not like us. Not like this band of immortals we have assembled. We have come to take back our...
Hartman? Is that...
my dog?
Oh,
Then the inevitable. The money kings could ignore us no longer. They sent an emissary, a cog in their machine of greed, to bring about our submission. Hank Paulson.
Hartman, this is blasphemy. We own the corners of the earth. It is futile to challenge us.
Oh, I've seen that look before. That of a predator taking in the scent of its prey. Bold, fearless. The look of a free man.
You have come far, Hartman. Farther than most. Be smart now. Join us. We will bring you money, power, everything you want,
You can be one of us if you will kneel. Everything. What do you think this is? This is America!
Okay, so that was called, or that's called The American Dream, and as I said, that does a pretty good job of putting all of these things into terms that are easily understood. These people deliberately try to, you know, there's always this deliberate attempt to try to twist things into, you know, and make them sound like they're better, or make them sound like they're something different, or make them sound like they're so, you know, that they're so complicated that people, you know, their people's brains just shut down and their eyes glaze over. You know, for example, printing money, quantitative easing, you know, come up with some kind of a silly, you know, QE2 or whatever, QE1, QE2, it's just printing money. Well, it's ridiculous. And so, but a lot of people just, you know, so there's always this attempt. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, why language over, you know, over time, language actually changes, is because people are always twisting, you know, it's not just the bureaucrats and, you know, the government that do it. People themselves do it. People are always kind of twisting the language around so that, you know, because certain words will take on whatever meaning, and then somebody usurps the meaning and tries to, you know, call, you know, they'll get a different word so that it makes it more pleasant, more palatable, and then it ruins the meaning of that word, or, you know, whatever the word that they usurped, you know. And so that's how the language over time, you can call whatever, you know, one thing turns into something completely different. And so But that, you know, that's why the language over time, that's why it you know, it does change, is because people are always trying to twist the meanings of things, you know, turn wrong into right and make wrong, make it seem like wrong is really better than it is, or you know, or try to obfuscate. So in any case, I thought that was very interesting. There's so much history that we're not taught. We're simply not taught. You know, in school, we were not taught. You know, even, you know, I was in school in primarily in the 1960s, and got out of high school in 1973. But they didn't really teach history. That, you know, the history was just the most boring and dry subject you could possibly imagine. They didn't really teach anything, and you know, for example, you know, Kennedy, you know, which I've heard it before, I guess, but I didn't really realize it, and you know, because of the way they presented it in this the American Dream film, he actually, did not know that he actually took back the, you know, he signed a thing, you know, an executive order taking back the, you know, for the U.S. government, the ability to print money. And, you know, and then 6 months later, he's dead. And then Johnson, the first thing Johnson does when he gets in, you know, takes over after Kennedy's dead is flips it back around and gets rid of the executive order. You know, that's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing stuff. But how do you get people to understand? You know, because especially in today's world, look at all of the people around. All of the people around us are just so, I mean, especially the kids. Everybody is just zoned out. They're all kind of absorbed in their own little whatever, their entertainment, or they've got their favorite TV show, and they're, you know, that they're absorbed into, or video games, or God knows what else. And people, you know, trying to explain something like this to people is, you know, a lot of people just don't want it. It's just too much to deal with. It's too painful. I guess it's kind of a call to arms. But even beyond that, I mean, just understanding stuff, you know, can go a long way to changing people's behavior. So, but we're surrounded, it seems that we're surrounded by people that simply don't want to know. It's just, you know. So, I don't know, today after I got back, you know, I pay to park my trailer at a wrecker service. And so I, you know, about every 6 months I go in and pay them. I could go in and pay them once a month, but it's just easier. And they, you know, they don't have a problem with me just going, you know, I'll go in there about every, you know, it just depends on, you know, but it ends up being about every 6 months. And so I went in and I paid my bill for the past 6 months. And so in any case, I ended up getting into probably about a 15-minute discussion with the, you know, the woman that they have working in there that took my money. And I was kind of basically... She ended up kind of getting a condensed version of my philosophy. And so we were kind of chit-chatting back and forth. And, and come to find out, you know, I gave her the little spiel about this woman was probably, you know, her kids were grown. But I gave her my little spiel about the homeschooling, you know, and I basically told her that, you know, hey, you know, and you've heard me say it a million times in the podcast, you know, not married, no kids, 56 years old, there's little to no chance I'm ever going to have any kids. However, knowing what I know, if I had kids now, if I ever had a kid, there's no way I'd send them to a public school. I would do whatever I had to do to either homeschool them or send them to a private school. And so this woman had actually homeschooled her own kids. And so now her kids are, from what she was talking, they've kind of graduated high school, and one of them's in college and one of them's off, you know, maybe in technical school or some kind of technical school. But she obviously agreed with me. So I had a really, really enjoyable conversation with her. She understood all this stuff. There are a lot of people that understand, they see what's happening to the country, but then they make the mistake of getting upset with it. You know, you have to be able to, there are a lot of people that think that learning, if you learn about these things and how these things work, that learning about evil is the equivalent of being upset. And it's not. Because if you approach it that way, you're just playing God. You know, it's just, you know, and if you end up getting upset because you're learning facts about, you know, the way the world works or the way evil works, in particular, just the way evil works. If you avoid that, it's like you have this part of playing God that you think is unpleasant. Because you start getting upset. Well, I have news for you. You know, you get upset, you lose. You get upset with evil, you become evil. You know, and just because you think there are parts that you can kind of pick and choose the different morsels of evil, you know, that are judgment, you can kind of pick and choose the ones that seem tasty to you, and kind of stick your head in the sand and pretend the other ones don't exist. You know, when they all have the same effect. But you have to be able to look, you know, understand what's going on, see what's going on around you, see what's going on in the world, see how people are brainwashed, they're programmed, they're just programmed animals responding to the greatest pressure. You have to be able to see that and not flinch. And it's not, I don't know, it's not something you can give yourself. You know, because there's always a, you know, this thing, well, I'm not going to care, or I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to do that. It's not, that's not something you can actually give yourself. The ability to look into the face of hell and not be affected by it. That's not something you can give yourself. That can only come as a result of a willingness to look at yourself. Because there is, you know, within each one of us, there is a, you know, this, the thing that the evil that's out loose in the world is also within every one of us. To one degree or another, we're all, you know, that evil is within us. And so if we can't look, you know, if we won't look at the evil that has actually, you know, made its way and is within us, then how in the world, you know, can we ever expect to deal with it outside? And so, you know, so, but in any case, you have to have a willingness to look at yourself, and to the degree that you can really, honestly, look at yourself, you know, and it's not an instant process. It doesn't happen overnight. You have to continue to. It's an ongoing process that never ends. Looking at yourself, but you know, if you're able to do that, and you have the right attitude, the right attitude is paramount. That's the right attitude's everything. If you have the right attitude, then it becomes possible to sort of look, you know, you can look at the outside and not be affected by it. You know, it's kind of a paradox. You know, is being, you can live in the world and actually interact with the world, but not have your identity corrupted by it. But, you know, people think that they can kind of pick and choose, somehow they twist it in their mind, pick and choose their corruptions, pick and choose, you know, they think, well, as I was saying, you know, the tasty morsels of judgment, you know, judging this and judging that, judging this and judging that, and getting into this distraction, getting into that distraction, and you know, kind of sticking their head in the sand, not wanting to know about the other things, you know, and because it's going to upset them or whatever. And so, but like I was telling her earlier, you know, and it's basically, I've said it before, sometimes people have to end up in the gutter. I think a lot of times people have to end up in the gutter before they'll wake up. And I think the country's going to have to end up in the gutter. Unfortunately, it sure seems that way. So, but, you know, the whole thing really does revolve around people not being genuine. You have a person that's not genuine, that doesn't have a genuine God-given identity. They're simply programmed robot. You know, they may look pleasant and it looks like they've got a personality and they look like a normal person, act like, you know, they seem to be normal. But their allegiance is to the outside, their allegiance is to whatever the greatest pressure is, whatever the greatest external pressure is. And so that's how you can end up with a country like Adolf Hitler, Germany, where Adolf Hitler, you know, everyone takes on Adolf Hitler's personality. How does that happen? It's because they're all, you know, you have the vast majority of people are just programmed robots. They're not genuine. And so they all take on the evil dictator personality. And so that's how it works. It, you know, it's very simple. At the root, it's very simple. It's all about identity. With us as individuals, it's about our identity. Who are we? You know, is your identity genuine? And you have to have a willingness to look, and because it can be painful, because if you look at the reason it's painful is because you know reality is always there trying to show you, you know, the fake and phony parts of yourself. And that's painful, because that is perceived as conscience. Conscience is making you feel guilty, and you don't want to feel guilty. You want to run away from that. Separate yourself from the guilt. You know, run into the arms of some kind of pleasure, some sort of distraction. So. I don't know, but in any case, I could go on and on and on. I'm going to go ahead and play, I've got this inauguration speech from John F. Kennedy, and I've had it for a while. I downloaded it from YouTube, and I'm going to go ahead and play it. It's kind of interesting to listen to this, listen to this and listen to him talk, and this was, as I say, this was his inauguration speech from 1961. So here is, President John F. Kennedy from 1961.
Vice President Johnson, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chief Justice, President Eisenhower, Vice President Nixon, President Truman, Reverend clergy, fellow citizens. We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. The world is very different now, for man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. This much we pledge and more. To those old allies whose cultural and spiritual origins we share, we pledge the loyalty of faithful friends. United, there is little we cannot do in a host of cooperative ventures. Divided, there is little we can do, for we dare not meet a powerful challenge at all and split asunder. To those new states whom we welcome to the ranks of the free, we pledge our word that one form of colonial control shall not have passed away merely to be replaced by a far more iron tyranny. We shall not always expect to find them supporting our view, but we shall always hope to find them strongly supporting their own freedom. And to remember that in the past, those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside. To those people in the huts and villages of half the globe, struggling to break the bonds of mass misery, we pledge our best efforts to help them help themselves. For whatever period is required, not because the communists may be doing it, not because we seek their votes, but because it is right. If a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. To our sister republics south of our border, we offer a special pledge to convert our good words into good deeds, in a new alliance for progress, to assist free men and free governments in casting off the chains of poverty. But this peaceful revolution of hope cannot become the prey of hostile powers. Let all our neighbors know that we shall join with them to oppose aggression or subversion anywhere in the Americas. And let every other power know that this hemisphere intends to remain the master of its own house. To that World Assembly of Sovereign States, the United Nations, our last best hope, in an age where the instruments of war have far outpaced the instruments of peace, we renew our pledge of support to prevent it from becoming merely a forum for invective, to strengthen its shield of the new and the weak, and to enlarge the area in which its writ may run. Finally, to those nations who would make themselves our adversary, we offer not a pledge, but a request that both sides begin anew the quest for peace. Before the dark powers of destruction, unleashed by science, engulf all humanity in planned or accidental self-destruction. We dare not tempt them with weakness, for only when our arms are sufficient beyond doubt can we be certain beyond doubt that they will never be employed. But neither can two great and powerful groups of nations take comfort from our present course. Both sides overburdened by the cost of modern weapons, both rightly alarmed by the steady spread of the deadly atom, yet both racing to alter that uncertain balance of terror that stays the hand of mankind's final war. So let us begin anew, remembering on both sides that civility is not a sign of weakness, and sincerity is always subject to proof. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. Let both sides explore what problems unite us, instead of belaboring those problems which divide us. Let both sides, for the first time, formulate serious and precise proposals for the inspection and control of arms, and bring the absolute power to destroy other nations under the absolute control of all nations. Let both sides seek to invoke the wonders of science instead of its terrors. Together, let us explore the stars, conquer the deserts, eradicate disease, tap the ocean depth, and encourage the arts and commerce. Let both sides unite to heed, in all corners of the earth, the command of Isaiah to undo the heavy burden and let the oppressed go free. And if a beachhead of cooperation may push back the jungle of suspicion, let both sides join in creating a new endeavor, not a new balance of power, but a new world of law, where the strong are just and the weak secure and the peace preserved. All this will not be finished in the first 100 days. Nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin. In your hands, my fellow citizens, more than mine, will rest the final success or failure of our course. Since this country was founded, each generation of Americans has been summoned to give testimony to its national loyalty. The graves of young Americans who answered the call to service surround the globe. Now the trumpet summons us again, not as a call to bear arms, though arms we need, not as a call to battle, though in battle we are, but a call to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle, year in and year out, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, a struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. Can we forge against these enemies a grand and global alliance, north and south, east and west, that can assure a more fruitful life for all mankind? Will you join in that historic effort? In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man. Finally, whether you are citizens of America or citizens of the world, ask of us here the same high standards of strength and sacrifice which we ask of you. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own.
Okay, so that was from 1961. That was John F. Kennedy's inauguration speech. You know, it's amazing. You listen, you actually listen, even somebody like Kennedy, you know, Kennedy was, you know, he's looked at as, you know, sort of the quintessential liberal and what have you. And if you actually look at what he did and how he talked, today he would be a conservative. He'd be considered, you know, probably extreme right wing. You know, because if you look at what he did, you know, while he was president, before he was assassinated, he lowered taxes, you know, which a lot of people may not, you know, if you don't know your history, you won't realize that, but he actually lowered taxes and, you know, the government ended up with more revenue and so on and so forth. And he was very anti-communist, you know, according to this film. He signed an executive order, kind of making it possible for the U.S. government to print its own money instead of, you know, kind of borrowing it from the Federal Reserve, you know, having to pay interest on it, so on and so forth. So he, you know, he's a pretty interesting fellow. But it's unfortunate that he was assassinated, because who knows what, you know, how the world might have been different had he had that not happened. So anyhow, probably better be cutting this off. Don't know if I'm going to go to bed right away, but I need to find, you know, probably look and see if I can find something to eat. So anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.